You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hello, happy July 4th, and welcome to an emergency edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. I wouldn't say that the Wizards made an explosive move earlier this morning, but I think it's fair to say that there was a Mike Scott signing, a flare tossed in the air, something like that. The Wizards have made a move, or I guess I could say technically they are close to making a move. According to a league source, the Wizards are very close to terms with free agent forward Mike Scott, a five-year veteran, played with the Atlanta Hawks. I'm sure Wizards fans are familiar with him. He's also a University of Virginia product, a Chesapeake, Virginia native. We're going to talk about that, and I guess I should say that the deal will be for the veterans minimum. I am told by a source it could come as soon as today. We're going to talk about what this means for the Wizards. How does it impact the roster? Does it have anything to do with Otto Porter's situation? And we'll look at the overall roster as a whole. Plus, I just recorded an interview with K.L. Chouinard, a writer for Hawks.com and host of the Hawks and 29 podcast. He shares his thoughts on Mike Scott, what he is as a player, what he thinks of that move for the Wizards. Just as a quick reminder, so far this offseason, the Wizards traded for point guard Tim Frazier. They obviously needed help there behind John Wall. They just, in free agency 2 days ago, came to terms with free agent wing guard Jody Meeks, who also gives them a backup behind Bradley Beal, a needed boost there. But Jody Meeks is a guy who only played 36 games last year. That's an important number to note because that's double the amount of games that Mike Scott just played with the Hawks, which makes the signing a bit curious, but there is some, I don't want to say upside, but there is a possibility that this deal could work out if the Wizards get the Mike Scott who rocked and rolled with the Hawks during the 2015-16 season. As you may recall, the Hawks won 60 games that year, were the top seed in the East, and Mike Scott was a key contributor on that team. He shot 39% from three, gave Atlanta a stretch four type off the bench. I was talking about a 6'8", about a 235, 36 pounder with good range. That player was not the player that we saw last year. In the 2016-17 season, Mike Scott only played in 18 games, was 4 of 27 from three, and he was on Atlanta until the Hawks traded him before the trading deadline to the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix promptly cut him, and he now gets new life, it appears, with the Wizards. Why did Mike Scott have such a bad 2016-17 season? Can't speak 100% why, and we're going to get KL's take on this, but a couple things to consider. One, at the start of the season, he was dealing with some left knee soreness. That kept him out of the lineup. Second, he was dealing with off-the-court matters. In the summer of 2016, he and his brother were pulled over by an officer in the state of Georgia. The car was searched. There were some drugs found. They were arrested. However, the case was eventually thrown out by a judge who said, or I guess the key evidence was thrown out by the judge who said that this was a matter of racial profiling. To what degree that factored into Mike Scott's head, the resolution did not come until later on. So what factors did that have in his head during last year? Hard to say. I know it would probably weigh on my mind, and I asked sort of KL to sort of speculate as well. Anyway, all those factors, I thought the Jody Meeks signing, you guys heard me talk about why I thought Jody Meeks made a lot of sense for the Wizards in advance of them actually doing it. There was a high risk reward situation there with big variables on both ends, considering Jody Meeks has been injured for much of the last couple of seasons. Well, Mike Scott is another one like that. And it is interesting that the Wizards have come out with their first two moves of free agency and have gone with two guys who have big variables as to where they could go. If healthy, they could be big help. But based on what's happened recently, it's hard to say that that's what they're getting. Perhaps the most curious part to this for me is the fact that we're in day four free agency and the Wizards don't have really, they don't have much roster space left. Forget the salary cap. I know that's where we all focus on. But roster space is a big deal. This was my issue last year with the Marcus Thornton signing, which came 1 week into free agency. This one's a little bit earlier. Marcus Thornton, the type of player you could probably bring into training camp in like September, the Wizards signed a week into free agency for the veteran minimum, just like Mike Scott. But it took up a roster spot. You never know what's potentially going to happen. Could a trade come your way? Could a free agent knock on the door and say, hey, I'm interested? It's not to say that the Wizards can't come up with a way to create space if it happens. Just saying that this move would take away a roster spot. And that part of it is probably the most curious of all as to, you know, where Mike Scott is with his knee, with his head, with everything else. You know, that's to be determined. Now, in terms of the actual fit, look, he's a three-point threat. Again, at least he was in 2015-16. And the Wizards could use some more front court depth. You know, they don't have, they have Jason Smith there, who's a 3-point threat up front off the bench. This gives them another option. I guess you would say he's more four than three. He can play at a couple different spots in the front court for the Wizards. It's an interesting signing, I guess, is all I can say without knowing exactly where Mike Scott is at, again, with his knee and his head. The timing is a little peculiar, but it is what it is, and apparently this is going to get done here rather shortly. Before I get into, I guess let me just not tease it too much. I don't want to be a tease here. As far as Otto Porter, what I was told was by a league source, this has no way, shape, or form impacting the Otto Porter situation. As we know, the Wizards starting small forward had a meeting with Sacramento on Sunday. If you missed that, I talked about it. Talked about that and the Jody Meek signing at length on a previous podcast over the weekend. I did that on Sunday night. I discussed what I saw with regards to that King story and some information I got out of that. In any event, I'm told that this has nothing to do with Otto Porter. They're just waiting to see what happens. Does Otto Porter officially get an offer sheet? Does it get signed? And if it does, I'm told the Wizards are still intending to match. Again, other people have told me in recent days, or I guess other some sources have told me, and I've heard other people say that they're not as convinced, but at the moment I'm seeing no reason why the Wizards wouldn't keep Otto Porter. We'll get more about the roster and what this means in just a second, but for right now, let's bring in our guest. All right, and as promised, joining us to help explain the ins and outs of Mike Scott, writer for Hawks.com and podcast host for the Hawks and 29 podcast, Mr. K.L. Chouinard. K.L., did I get all that right with your bio there?
Yeah, it's ATL and 29.
ATL and 29. All right. What I don't even know. What does that stand for?
It's just the Hawks and the other 29 teams.
Oh.
So, talk about the league, but pretty much every episode we talk a little bit about the Hawks too.
Gotcha. All right. Well, so here we are talking. I had no intention of putting up a podcast today, but the Wizards decided they wanted to make a move. And seeing as I, you know, sort of laying around here this morning, I thought, let me talk a little bit about this. I checked in with you, and you were kind enough to come on and give us a quick lowdown on what the Wizards are getting here. And just to be clear, at the moment we're talking, nothing is official. But what I was told earlier today, as I said earlier in the podcast, was that they have, according to a source, they are very close to getting the deal done. Could be done as soon as today. Obviously, nothing can be signed officially until the moratorium ends on July 6th. All right, enough of that. Mike Scott, you hear that the Wizards sign him, and you think what?
I mean, I think it's a good gamble because it's a low risk deal. If I understand right, it's a minimum.
Correct, a veteran's minimum. Yep.
Okay, and you know what's the Wizards cap situation?
It's not great. I mean, basically at this point, well, they don't have much going on. They've already signed Jody Meeks, using the biannual exception. The bigger issue may be the roster situation. In that, with Mike Scott, and let's just assume that Otto Porter stays. At this point, that continues to be what I'm told. If Otto Porter stays, that's basically your 15 players. They've got two guys in Sheldon Mack and Daniel Oshefu who are, I believe their contracts are not guaranteed, but they're under contract. Plus, they have Chris McCullough, who essentially didn't play last year. So that's 15. That may be the bigger takeaway. So they don't have a lot of money left, and Mike Scott may have, depending how you look at it, may have taken a last roster spot.
Okay. So, you know, it's a good gamble. He's a, how do I say this? He's a stretch four, but not necessarily a small ball four. So, you know, he's going to be able to do a lot of things on offense. He's a good passer on the short roll, so he can pick and pop, he can pick and roll. If he's doing the pick and roll, if you pass him the ball and the defense shifts, he can get the ball to the right spot. You know, he can make threes. If you spread the floor out, he has a nice post game. I know that seems like very 1987 to say, but... Right, because you know, the NBA has gotten to the point where you don't even want the 7-footers playing in the post, but you know, if you spread the floor out and you get him the ball down low, he's got an assortment of moves. He's got a really quick release. Like if you get him the ball down in the post, he's probably gonna like elevate and shoot before anybody even kind of reacts. He's real quick in the post, he takes a high volume of shots, but the question is going to be, you know, is he confident? I think, you know, he's a player maybe who kind of waxes and wanes a little bit. And, you know, last season, you know, he struggled. He was hurt and then he got out of the rotation. And I think he lost his confidence a bit at that point.
And that's what I was going to ask you, because I, you know, remember the Mike Scott when the Hawks won 60 games in the 2015-16 season, he's shooting 39% from three. He's a big pain in the butt. With that second unit. But then last year, I mean, he wasn't even there for when the Wizards and Hawks met the playoffs, because by that point they had already traded him to Phoenix. And, you know, for a team like the Hawks were trying to, you know, do something in the playoffs, you could kind of understand why they moved on. He was shooting, what did he shoot, 4-4-27 from three. He only played in 18 games. How much, you mentioned the confidence, you mentioned, I think, a little bit of the knee issue. How much, there was also the offseason issue where he and his brother were arrested. I already talked about that at the top of the podcast, but those charges were cleared eventually. But that was still, I think, weighing. That wasn't resolved until later on. How much do you think, that off-the-court matter was weighing on his head combined with the knee injury? How much did those factors really contribute to his down season?
I mean, I think the injury probably did a little bit. I mean, I can't speculate as to the charges that I have no idea if that was something that was, you know, weighing on him. I mean, if it were me, I guess it would, right? But yeah, he was cleared of all the charges. That it was quite an interesting case, right? I mean, the numbers, and it was like he basically was cleared because they looked over the records of the arresting officer, and it was like 100%, you know, minority pullovers for the traffic stops. Which is pretty scary. But, you know, I guess that could have been weighing on him. I mean, if we just completely speculate and throw it against the wall. But, you know, personally, I don't know if that weighed on him or not. But he did just seem to struggle with his confidence. I mean, he's only a year removed from an all-defense vote. He got a vote for the all-defense teams for 2015-16, which is not as ridiculous as the Isaiah Thomas vote.
But I was gonna ask you about that, because I can look up you know, his 3-point shooting percentage stats, but you know, there's typically not as many defensive stats. In 2015-16 though, his he had an offensive rating of 112, a defensive rating of 104, according to Basketball Reference. So that's good. Last year,
Oh, yeah. I was saying that, I don't know what the difference is between the Basketball Reference numbers and the stats.nba.com numbers. But if you looked at the NBA numbers, I want to say that he was like second in defensive rating for 2015-16. Which is kind of ludicrous for a defender who's, you know, not necessarily a strong defender. But at the same time, you know, he played really hard. He was being used in managed situations. So I want to say the Hawks probably had like a 10-man rotation, and he was playing the 10th most minutes. So Budenholzer would put him into the game in situations where his defense wasn't going to be really an issue. And, you know, he did well in those situations, to his credit.
Obviously, and maybe I'll ask you about the Hawks before we get off, but obviously the Hawks seemingly are going into a different direction right now than the Wizards are. The Wizards are trying to compete for a title with the loss of Millsap and some other things. Feels like Atlanta's going the other way. But in terms of Mike Scott, I mean, if I had said to you that he was going to come back to the Hawks, would that be exciting? Would you be like, really? Can we just move on? Like, where were you in terms of the Hawks with Mike Scott?
I mean, I would be fine with Mike Scott, the player, but I just think that maybe, you know, could be a fresh start for him. It's probably, you know, for a player who struggles with confidence, I think if he gets things going in Washington, that's probably a better situation. You know, if he has a good October and a good November in Washington than if he did here, just because I think he'll get into a little bit more of a groove and a role and not worry about, you know, situation or confidence or things turning on him as much. He played at UVA. He's been in the league for like 5 or 6 years since he got out of UVA. He's probably almost 30 though, because he was an older player when he came out of UVA. But I just think it's a fresh start. He gets to stay in the Southeast, which he's probably happy about. You know, he's from, I want to say, Virginia. Like, he played at Virginia, and he is like in high school, and his traveling team and stuff, I think, was sort of Virginia, North Carolina.
Yeah, he's from.
So, you know, he gets to stay home. It's probably a good situation, as good a situation as you could ask for him.
Yeah, he's a Chesapeake, Virginia native. It's sort of Southern Virginia. He's also, he turns 29 later this month. So, yeah, I mean, the way I sort of phrasing it is, if he's right, if the Wizards are getting the guy that was the 2015-16 version, I mean, this is a potential steal. Your defensive notes are interesting. I'm going to have to go maybe try to look up that, because I was kind of thinking the Wizards needed for this spot sort of a 3-4 guy who can really defend, and ideally if he can hit the 3 as well, that'd be good. Sounds like they've got a guy who can hit the 3, and maybe there's some hope defensively, but, he's not Kawhi.
You don't want him defending like the smaller fours. You know, he's better, you know, defending in the post and defending traditional bigs. If it gets to be a matter of him having to move out on the perimeter, that's probably a little bit more of an issue.
You think in some cases he could play the 3, or is that too much?
I think it's going the other way. I mean, I think, you know, the way the NBA is now, he could be like an ideal like stretch 5. I mean, I think that's sort of a situation that would be really good for him. Like, you know, if he were coming back to the Hawks, and I guess this is really doubly moot. Like, the Millsap-Scott front court was really nice. I thought, you know, that worked really well. Regardless of who you would say was playing center, you know, it kind of stretched the floor. The ball would move all over the place. And, you know, Millsap was good enough as a defender that you could give Scott whatever the other assignment was, whether it was guarding a big or guarding a weaker power forward. I mean, I think he would be an ideal stretch 5, but for being a 3, I wouldn't try that.
Gotcha. It's kind of crazy. I mean, the Wizards have made 2 moves. We're 4 days into free agency. The first move was Jody Meeks, who only played 36 games last year, and that's double what Mike Scott played. So it's kind of crazy that the two guys they've added basically didn't play last year. So only because you're in the it's in the same division. Do you have any Jody Meeks thoughts since I got you here?
In general, with both Meeks and Scott, I mean, it's just such a high variable outcome for what they might get out of these guys, right? I mean, it's like they could look like geniuses in 12 months, or they could look like, you know, they just at every wrong button in 12 months. I mean, it's it just seems like an outcome that has a really wide range of outcomes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it's definitely a little bit scary. I mean, I like the Jody Meek signing because I think he's kind of, if he's healthy, gives them what they need. But like, yeah, to take on another player who we really don't have a good know what the floor is a bit scary. But all right, many thanks to KL Chouinard for hopping on. I talked a little bit more about the Hawks situation. Team the Wizards face in the opening round of the postseason. I'll play that for you guys in a later podcast. Just didn't want to put in too much here just for right now. Of course, you can follow Kale on Twitter at KL Chouinard, Chouinard. And again, follow him. Go check out his work on Hawks.com. Before I get out of here on here, so I mentioned earlier about the roster. So the Wizards, in essence, have 14 players under contract. That's not counting Otto Porter or Bojan Bogdanovic. Presumably at this point, I guess I didn't even mention. I don't know if I would say that Mike Scott is the Bojan Bogdanovic replacement, but I guess I would just say with his presence, especially a front court player who can shoot from three, I already didn't think Bogdanovic was coming back. This pretty much confirms more of that, I guess I would say, assuming that the Porter situation happened. So, once Otto Porter comes back, that would be 15. The basic look is like this. The starting lineup, Markieff Morris, Otto Porter, Marcin Gortat, until further notice, Bradley Beal and John Wall. Second unit, more or less, you've got Jason Smith, Kelly Oubre, Jan Mahimi, Jody Meeks, Tim Frazier. From there, you've got now Mike Scott, I would probably say is the next front court reserve. Tomas Satoransky, the next backcourt reserve. Three spots. You've got Chris McCullough, who is under contract. Again, former 2015 first-round pick from the Nets, who ended up coming over here in the Bogdanovic trade. You've got Sheldon Mack, entering his second season. From what I can tell, the Wizards are definitely believers in Sheldon Mack, a really aggressive guard. Potentially give the Wizards a bit of a defensive presence in the backcourt. And that leaves one spot left. Based off of the fact that he was on the team last year, you would think that Daniel Oshefu, center from Villanova, gets that job, or at least is the favorite for that job. But of course, the Wizards also have a bunch of undrafted free agents coming into the Las Vegas Summer League, notably Devin Robinson from Florida State, Kid Young from Pitt, Chris Jenkins from Villanova. I would say Robinson and Young are probably the favorites at this point. If somebody's going to sneak in, Daniel House, who was with the team a year ago, is also expected to join the Wizards in Las Vegas. So, there could be some competition for that one spot, and we'll see if House has that on lock or not. In any event, there does, the Wizards can make some moves. Oshefu and Mack, their contracts, I don't believe, are guaranteed. So the Wizards could, in theory, move on from them if needed. To get some other, if they see some other deal. But for the most part, we may already have a look at what the Wizards roster looks like. I do think that the Meeks and Frazier moves, considering how bad the backcourt was last year, is an upgrade. But obviously, it's not a screaming, oh my lord, they just got Paul George upgrade. And the fact that Meeks and Scott are guys with two big ranges of outcomes, it is a bit scary. I think it's fair to say, not quite knowing what you're getting out of them. But we'll see. It's July 4th. There's a long way to go, but the Wizards may have already made their moves in free agency outside of maintaining Otto Porter. We will see. All right, I'm going to end it there. Thank you guys for joining in on this emergency edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing signing off, and until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Drives, off the shot. Dagger! Not ball.